Welcome to MuggleCast, your weekly ride into the Wizarding World fandom. I'm Andrew.
I'm Eric.
I'm Micah.
I'm Laura.
On today's episode, we are going to discuss MuggleNet's new book, The Unofficial Harry Potter Character Compendium, MuggleNet's Ultimate Guide to Who is Who in the Wizarding World. And we are joined by one of the authors, Marissa. Hi, Marissa. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, you also have been a longtime listener of MuggleCast, right?
Mm-hmm. For several years.
Awesome. Awesome. So you're going to fit right into today's episode. And obviously, you're a part of the MuggleNet team. What do you do at MuggleNet besides write this awesome book?
I'm the transcript coordinator, so I handle any video transcripts or audio transcripts for the site.
That was kind of like Micah's old job for MuggleCast.
We should compare notes. It's not a very I will say it is a very humbling experience. It's not always fun, but
agreed.
Might not be a sexy job, but it's an important job. Transcripts.
There you go.
Yes.
Cool. So we'll talk about this book later in today's episode. We all received copies and we're all really impressed with it. It's this character encyclopedia. It's just a wonderful resource to have. And Laura, what did you say to Marissa before the show today?
Oh, yeah. I was immediately like, thank you for this gift. because it is so well organized and is people who are weekly researching and developing conversations. This is going to be so helpful because if I want to know like what house some random obscure character we only met once was in, I can find it here as opposed to having to dive through thousands of pages of the original novels to try and find it. So this is a gift. Thank you so much.
We'll talk about it later more. And I also want to talk about just gathering all this information. It must have been a massive task. But first, let's turn to Muggle Mail, and we're going to start with a voicemail.
Hey, MuggleCast, this is Jeff. I was thinking about alternate titles for Harry Potter and the Order of the Phoenix after listening to your most recent episode. And I think if I had to call it something else, I would call it Harry Potter and the Lost Prophecy, because that would kind of go along with at least, I believe it's 5 out of 7 books that also have chapter titles that are the same as the title of the book. And the prophecy is really what the whole book, really all the books up to that point at least, are kind of leading up to that moment where Harry finally understands what his destiny is supposed to be. It was just a thought that came to me. I wonder what you guys want to think about it. Bye.
I love it. Harry Potter and the Lost Prophecy. What a tease that would have been.
Agree.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. I remember last episode, Laura and I kind of went more with the more marketable titles, whereas I think you, Andrew, and Eric went with a little bit more like creativity. Not to say that we didn't have it, but I feel like Jeff's voicemail here, his suggestion would have fit in well with what Laura and I came up with.
It's a deeper cut than the titles that you two came up with. No offense. All right, let's move on to the written emails.
Hey guys, love the show and loved last week's episode. When you guys were discussing the most notable new characters in Book 5 and how they were portrayed on screen, it reminded me of a new casting idea for Umbridge I've had for a while now and have been dying to share because I believe it's a match made in heaven. While watching the TV show Fleabag, I felt like I was reintroduced to the Umbridge that lives in my head. Olivia Colman! Her character in Fleabag even has the same sickly sweet cover-up personality that hides, sort of, the evil within. I love Olivia Colman, so this is no shade to her, but her facial features even better resemble the features JK describes in the book. Please tell me I was not the only one who was thinking this while watching Fleabag. By the way, it's a great show, and I highly recommend. Anyway, that's my 2 cents on that. And no shade to Imelda Staunton either. She was incredible. But I'd love to see what Olivia Colman could bring to the role one day in that inevitable TV reboot we're all waiting for.
Wow. 1,000%. I've had the same thought.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
While watching Fleabag or just...
No, actually, when I watched the third season of The Crown.
Okay.
Because she plays the queen. Mm-hmm. In the third and fourth seasons. She's just so skilled that I think she could pull it off. But she's also a bit of a chameleon. I mean, if you see her in The Crown versus, you know, Fleabag, she looks like it's like a 20-year difference. So they are like, she is just able to be transformed into whatever character. And I think that she would absolutely have the Umbridge personality down.
It's funny because I know her from Broadchurch and she's not like Umbridge at all in that show.
Right. Yeah, right. Oh, yeah. She was in Broadchurch.
She's,
yep.
She's Ellie Miller.
Yep.
But yeah, like I love what Matt said as far as this awakened the character that had been in my head, like from the books, because, you know, the movies do tend to, I think, overlay anything that we have that is just the book sometimes, especially in discussion. This happens to me with MuggleCast, you know, like I'm like always thinking of the movie actor, but really it's the book character. So I like that, the way he put that.
I had seen this show and Olivia Colman's role, and I hadn't made the Umbridge connection, but I did include a highlight reel in our rundown today, and we're going to include it in today's show notes. If you watch it, you will get some Umbridge vibes, as Matt was saying. So do check that out in today's episode show notes.
Let's keep fan casting this TV series. I think this will be great.
Yeah.
We could do a whole episode about that.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Next one comes from Sam. Sam says, I wanted to share that I had to laugh when you all said that Umbridge makes you want to punch a pillow. I have a vivid memory of doing just that. It was my second or third read through. I was in bed and just finished the chapter where she banned Harry and the twins from playing Quidditch. As I put the book down to go to sleep, I was so mad I couldn't help but give my pillow a few punches in frustration. Glad to hear I wasn't alone with that feeling. Hope you're all doing well and staying healthy. We hope you are too, Sam.
I think what this means is we need to create Umbridge pillows and sell them on Etsy or something. And then we can all punch Umbridge. Somebody work on that. I did the shirts already this year. Yeah. Somebody else could do this.
That's a great idea.
Next year's Patreon gift, an Umbridge pillow. Exclusively used for punching, not cuddling or relaxing.
Unless you're Filch, then you might want to cuddle.
Yes, aww. Yes.
Next email comes from David, who says, in the previous podcast, you were wondering what happened to Umbridge and if she was still working at the ministry under Scrimgeour. There is a mention of her in chapter 16, A Frosty Christmas of Half-Blood Prince. When Harry is talking with Scrimgeour in the Weasley Garden, he says, if you were to be seen popping in and out of the ministry from time to time, for instance, that would give the right impression. And of course, while you were there, you would have ample opportunity to speak to Gawain Robars, my successor as head of the Aura office. Dolores Umbridge has told me that you cherish an ambition to become an Aura. Well, that could be arranged very easily. Harry felt anger bubbling in the pit of his stomach. So Dolores Umbridge was still at the ministry.
Okay, good catch.
Yeah.
Great catch.
And apparently she's giving recos for Harry to become an Aura. Who knew?
I think it was more like she was being insulting about it, but Scrimgeour hearing that info was like, oh, I can make this my advantage.
Okay, thank you to everybody who wrote in. We appreciate and love receiving all of this feedback. Before we discuss MuggleNet's new book with Marissa, I want to talk about a wand for your mouth. Chances are your wand needs some updating because 75% of Muggles use old, worn-out bristles that are ineffective, and even more people forget to floss daily. Good health starts with good habits. This week's sponsor, Quip, makes it easy to keep up with healthy habits by delivering all the oral care essentials you need to brush and floss better. That means brushing for 2 minutes twice a day and flossing regularly. Quip helps you do that with their electric brush, which has sensitive sonic vibrations with a built-in timer and 30-second pulses to guide you through a full and even clean. I love the Quip because it's lightweight, it's quiet, and it's thinner than other electric toothbrushes. It gives you the best brushing experience. Dentists strongly recommend brushing for 2 full minutes, and they also recommend electric toothbrushes. And you know it's true. Micah, you went to a dentist this morning, right?
I did.
Did they tell you to brush for 2 full minutes?
They did. And they also told me I brush too hard.
Ah.
So a Quip would be a really great thing for me to be able to use based on everything you just said.
Yes, it is a soft brush. I've been a user of electric toothbrushes for a decade now, and my dentist is always happy with my work, which is always a huge relief because I don't like the dentist. And that's why you got to try Quip. Quip brush heads, toothpaste, and floss refills are automatically delivered on a dentist-recommended schedule every 3 months for just $5 each. It's a friendly reminder when it's time for a refresh and to stay committed to your oral health. And shipping is free. Join over 3 million healthy mouths and get Quip today starting at $25. And if you go to getquip.com/muggle right now, you will get your first refill free. That's your first refill free at getquip.com/muggle, spelled getquip.com/muggle, M-U-G-G-L-E. Quip is the Good Habits Company and my favorite real world wand. Okay, so Marissa, let's turn our attention to you and this new book, The Unofficial Harry Potter Character Compendium, MuggleNet's Ultimate Guide to Who's Who in the Wizarding World. First of all, tell us about this book. How did you guys get the idea to create it? And just tell us what listeners and readers can find in it.
Well, I personally wasn't part of the the idea conception or anything like that. But I do know it has to do with MuggleNet becoming an independent brand. And now that we are, we have plans to publish a lot of different magazines and books. Mm. So that was, this was sort of the first, I know this is our first book in 10 years, I think it was. So this is our first foray back into the publishing mm-hmm. world. Mm. And so when they contacted us about writing it, they were like, we want to create a book that has all the information anyone would ever need about every single character, down to the ones that are even barely mentioned in passing, mm-hmm. that don't even get full sentences. And I was like, sign me up.
Because that's what Harry Potter fans want. We've always finally. Hoped, right, finally, Micah, because we always hoped that J.K. Rowling was going to give us a Harry Potter encyclopedia, and she never did. Still hurts. Mm-hmm.
that's exactly what I was just going to say. We finally have an encyclopedia that we can reference.
And it actually goes a little further than the characters we've read about in the books, right? Because there's this non-canon character yeah. section. Tell us about that.
Yeah. So towards the back of I think the Barnes & Noble exclusive edition, we have MuggleNet's favorite non-canon characters. Mm-hmm. And most of them are either from maybe the movies or characters that were found on J.K. Rowling's website in like her blog posts about ones that didn't quite come to fruition. So like Hermione's sister or Mafalda Weasley, yeah. those sort of things.
I love that because that's what fans want, right? They want the little details too.
Yeah.
Now, I know on this panel here, there was some debate about calling these characters canon or not. Marissa, you actually feel that some of these characters should be considered canon, right?
Yeah, but I recognize I have a pretty controversial opinion of what canon and non-canon is considered. For example, I'm obsessed with Cursed Child, and to me that is canon, which I know is very mm-hmm. controversial. So,
well, thank you for coming on the show today, Marissa. And there's the door.
No, I agree with Marissa because J.K. Rowling said it's canon, and thus it is canon. Period.
Oh, I don't want to. Yeah. I don't want it to be.
I respect that. I'm never one to fight about what other. I feel like canon's a very personal thing. So,
okay.
But yeah, so I, you know, like Bim. I love Bim. He's the one that changes houses in the movies, and he's the one that, you know, is talking about Sirius Black, and he's like trying to catch smoke with your bare hands.
Yeah.
I love Bim. Bim's canon, 100%.
See, I would not consider Bim canon because he's a movie character. Some of these characters are only movie characters, and for that reason, I feel like they're not canon. There are a couple characters in here that J.K. Rowling has brought up in interviews, and I feel like those characters could be considered canon, like Hermione Granger's younger sister, who was left on the cutting room floor, but she brought that up in 2004. Or Mopsus, or Mafalda Weasley, who was the daughter of Molly Weasley's second cousin.
Wasn't Mafalda originally supposed to serve the same role that Rita Skeeter did?
Yes.
Yep.
In Goblet of Fire? Yeah. So I feel like that very much makes her at least tangentially canon, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm.
But she doesn't yeah. exist, I feel like, though, in any of the work. Like, she's just right. a conception. So to me, that's not canon.
I agree. Yeah. I agree. She also would not be Weasley. She's listed as Mafalda in the book, and rightly so. If she's the second cousin of, or somebody's daughter's second cousin of Molly, Molly's not a Weasley. Molly's a Fabian. Molly's a Pruitt. I doubt it would be Mafalda Weasley. And also, all Weasleys are Gryffindors. Mafalda would have been a Slytherin.
Well, somebody has to divert.
Well, I mean, I'm just saying all of the pureblood families are interrelated.
Mm-hmm. Lara with the truth bomb there.
That's all I'm saying.
Game of Thrones action going on.
Yep.
But it's such a cool throwback, though, too, to be able to go through this book, particularly this section that we were just talking about with Mopsis and just thinking about the origin of that name and coming from Greek mythology and the fact that she decided, instead of going with Greek mythology in that sense, she went with the Trelawneys and Sybil and Cassandra, basically this whole family of seers. But I was looking forward to seeing this character. I was quite disappointed that he didn't end up in the book. But as you note here, we ended up with Trelawney and her quirks and her personality. And I think that it worked out at the end of the day, but I just remember kind of going through J.K. Rowling's website and reading her interviews, and this one stood out to me. So I was really happy to see that ended up in the book.
You guys also wrote these other sections that cover Ilvermorny, the Four Houses of Hogwarts, the Ministers of Magic, the Chocolate Frog Card. So it's not just a straight up character encyclopedia. You have all these other sections as well. And some of them are scattered throughout the book, which is a refreshing break from the character breakdowns. But tell us about the development of this book in terms of writing it. How did you and the rest of the MuggleNet team gather all the info for this book? And how long did that take?
Longer than you would think. So if it didn't have a direct citation, right back to the books or the movies or wherever the character was coming from, then it was unable to be used. So even though we have this amazing World Wide Web, there's a lot of wiki pages or fan pages out there that just sort of gather educated guesses that the fandom has put together, but there's no actual citation back to a chapter or a scene. So we had to parse through all of that. And if it wasn't directly able to be cited, then we didn't want to use it because it wasn't a part of the official world.
So you were working off of a master list of characters?
Yeah. So the publisher actually put together the list. And before we even started writing, we went through and they had either included ones that later ended up in the non-canon section, or they had forgotten a couple. And so that was also our responsibility, was to make sure the list was whole.
Mm-hmm. And who gave the final sign off on a character? Like, who said, okay, Dobby's good to go? Or some of the other more random characters that pop up?
So we did as a group. So the co-authors, as well as Felicia Grady and Kat Miller, we all had this chat together and we would share documents and everybody would go through and be like, yep, that one's good to go. That summary is correct, blah, blah, blah. And so we all held each other accountable for those things.
Yeah, that sounds like it was a great system.
Yeah, I'm really lucky in that everybody I got to work with was not just a good teammate, but really knowledgeable about Harry Potter, because it's been a while since I did a read through. And there were some things where I was completely embarrassed. I was like, oh, that is not how I remember it.
Sounds like this was also incredibly efficient because you all moved pretty quickly, right?
Yeah. We signed on in September of last year and started in early October. And then they really wanted it done by the holidays, but that just ended up not happening because we added so many characters to the main list, and we have over 700. So we actually ended up finishing around the first of the year.
Wow.
Yeah.
And when you all get the book at home, you're going to see why we're saying wow right now, because it is extensive.
The big question that I had was the typesetting of this book is actually just really beautiful. The way it's arranged, especially for the special segments, but even in the regular segments with the use of various fonts and backgrounds and stuff. So who was responsible for that?
So the publisher did that. They apparently had this plan from the beginning because we had these set word counts that we had to work with so that they could make these layouts and spreads look really nice. And I think it's worth it because when we got those first proofs and we saw just even the detailing on the page, let alone the way the summaries were set up, I was blown away. I think we all were to see it. And so it's even more beautiful as a physical copy now that it's finished.
Yeah.
They used Ravenclaw colors, I see.
Yes, as a Ravenclaw, I'm very happy about that.
Me too.
There's a Wizarding World type of feel to it.
Now that you've studied all of these characters closely and you gathered all this information on these characters, who is the most interesting Harry Potter character in your eyes based on your research?
Oh, gosh. I mean, even though I knew, I mean, because this is a question everybody always asks, but it's really hard because interesting to me is always equated with who is my personal favorite, but I don't think that mm-hmm. always really is actually who's interesting. So with this book, and there's over 700 characters in there. So there were some that I had literally never heard of before, or I had only heard of them once, so I'd forgotten about them, like Gertie Kettle. She was the witch who watched her neighbors out the window, and the neighbors were playing like the earliest form of Quidditch, and she wrote all that down.
Oh my gosh.
Like, who is Gertie? Like, what? And so I thought that was one of the most, like, she was really interesting. And then Agatha Timms, she owns an eel farm, and in Goblet of Fire, she bets half of her shares that the World Cup will go on for a week. Like, wow. Excuse me, Agatha, I think you need some help with your gambling addiction.
Oh, man. Those poor eels. She should,
that's almost as reckless a bet as Fred and George's, which turns out to be true.
Mm-hmm. I still want to know how they did that.
Time travel, for sure.
This question is a little bit along these lines, but is there anything that you were just really surprised to learn about a character that you just didn't, like, it can even be a popular character, like, oh, I just had no clue that that was true about that person.
Once you know and have been in the fandom, it's like, you know those things, but it gets kind of pushed back to the back of your mind and your conscience. So as I was looking through, like, I'm pretty sure I wrote Snape. I'm almost 100% sure I wrote Snape's bio, and I forget how kind of tragic his backstory is a lot of the time.
Yeah.
And while I was like reading it and writing it, I was like, no, you can't feel bad for him. He's a terrible person. Like, why are you getting weepy over Snape?
Mm-hmm.
So I just get, it's like, you don't remember the nuances of, especially the adult mm-hmm. characters, because you don't grow up with them.
Yeah. And right. Speaking of Snape, I think this was also eye-opening for you in terms of the bigger backstories for some of the characters.
Yeah, especially McGonagall. So she's my favorite. I always said when I grow up, I want to be the perfect mixture between McGonagall and Molly Weasley. And and I love Minerva McGonagall. So when I was reading her backstory, it's just... The same with Snape, but I didn't feel bad about being weepy over McGonagall because she is, I mean, as I wrote in the book, she's the true hero of the Harry Potter saga. So
I was just checking to make sure that you wrote that because mm-hmm. I was flipping through and it was like, Marissa better have written that section if she was the one that
definitely did.
Feels this strongly about McGonagall.
Yeah. So this was another cool section of the book. At the end, you have this section called The Real Heroes of the Harry Potter Series. And like we just said, you wrote about McGonagall. Why did you write about McGonagall? Why did you choose her?
I think that it's kind of a no-brainer because she has all of the qualities that make her a hero by the classical nature, by all like literary terms. She is a hero. But none of those qualities negate the other characters' journeys, and they don't come at the cost of anything. So I wrote like this. I've been quoting this to everybody who listened to me, but I wrote this section that that says, while her hero-esque qualities and achievements do contribute to her classification as a hero, it is what these qualities do not do in spite of the circumstances of the plot that make her more. Her bravery does not make her reckless. Her intelligence does not make her arrogant. Her compassion does not make her gullible. Her past does not make her conflicted or weak. Mm. I think that
sounds great.
Yep.
I also like, since we're talking about this, the real heroes of HP segment, I like what Richard wrote about Neville, which I summed up, or I found this very succinct portion of it. Not all of us can be Harry Potter, but we can all be Neville simply by fighting for the ideals Harry represents. Mm-hmm. And I like that one a lot, too. And McGonagall falls into that category as well. She fights for the same thing, and she's on Harry's team.
Yeah. Mm.
And I feel like those qualities are so emblematic of this fandom, too.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because, you know, this is a pretty, like, progressive fandom, and we, you know, as a fandom, we all tend to rally around each other. So I love seeing that reflected here.
Yeah, I was really excited to read everybody else's, because even though I feel strongly about Minerva, I don't necessarily think that Neville is not the one true hero. I think that heroes come in a lot of different ways, and without each quote unquote hero's journey in the book, even the smallest side characters, then you wouldn't have the ultimate narrative. So I feel like they're all really important.
Yeah. I don't think I ever even thought about it in that capacity until I looked through this section, like just reading about a character like Narcissa Malfoy, who doesn't get a lot of page time throughout the series, but yet, you know, Chelsea does a really good job laying out why she is the real heroine of the Harry Potter series. And you know, the others like Dobby, Fred and George. It's just really cool reading through all these other perspectives that I otherwise wouldn't have thought about. But Andrew, this sounds like a great idea for an episode in the future. I don't know if you agree.
Yeah, for sure. I don't know why you're pointing that question at me precisely, but...
Well, you know,
Eric,
sounds like a great idea for an episode, don't you?
You're right, Micah, and I'm going to develop a main discussion that's all about how Eric Munch is the biggest hero in the Harry Potter world. In fact, I was so thrilled, I was sad, as right when I opened up this book, I went straight to the E's for my buddy,
The M's,
Eric.
You mean, because it's by last name.
I forgot that even in Order of the Phoenix, so later after, so when Harry goes to the ministry, the wand wearer, Mr. Weasley, says, "Thank you, Eric," and walk away. I forgot he was later mentioned in the paper and given a last name when he arrests Sturgis Podmore. So I was looking under the E's. I was very upset. I'm like, oh my God, I'm going to give Marissa such crap because, like, I know a character that's totally mentioned by name in a book and is not in here. But then I looked again and I was like, oh, wait, it's under the M's. Okay, great. Thank
you. Wow. God. And I'm looking over Eric's shoulder now and he drew hearts around Eric Munch's name. That's love.
I know. There's also space. I want to get people to like sign this book. It's so nice. Like, I want to put like get names signed next to the character names. I don't know.
Oh, that's a really good idea.
Like, you want Eric Munch to sign the book for you?
Yeah, whoever played Eric Munch in the deleted scene of Order of the Phoenix. I'm going to track him down on
Candy. I thought you meant maybe the authors of the book could sign it for you, but no, Eric wants the fictional characters.
Oh, yeah, Marissa, next time I see you at a convention or a MuggleNet meeting, please sign my book.
I would love to.
One side question I have for you is, because you do love McGonagall so much, do you have any thoughts about her role in Fantastic Beasts? Do you think we're going to see more of her in the film series? Or,
I mean, of course, I always hope we do. But mm-hmm. I just think that there's so much in that series that there's so little time for those side moments. So I think realistically, if we do see her again, it's going to be in the same capacity that we sort of already have, where she's just sort of like running down the hall, or like we pass by the door and she's in there teaching or something of that nature.
Yeah. Okay.
One question that I had was, what went into the decision to include characters from Fantastic Beasts? Because obviously that series is ongoing. So there's going to be new ones that pop up, whereas Potter is kind of set and done. Did you have a lot of discussion about why to include Fantastic Beasts?
I think that decision probably happened somewhere above my head. But I've had mixed feelings on it, although I never really expressed them because, I mean, on one hand, why wouldn't we? They already exist. But I agree. I think it almost makes me feel like it's unfinished in a way, that there will be characters in the future that won't be in here. Although I guess that leaves room open for a second version.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, updated. I was going to say edition. The updated, yeah, unofficial. The updated.
Yeah.
How many U words can we fit in the title, you guys?
It's already a mouthful as it is. It's so fun to say, though.
That's what publishers do, right? They want to get as much in there as possible so you understand what the book is without having mm-hmm. to open it. That's like the thing in publishing.
MuggleNet has a history of comprehensive book titles, so it's fine.
Yeah, yeah.
I would blame the publishers, though, and it's not a bad thing. It's just very common. You see that everywhere.
At the beginning, we weren't even allowed to know the title or anything. Like before we signed our contracts, we weren't allowed to know the publisher, the title, any of it. And so Felicia and Kat just kept referring to it as Who's Who. And for months, we, in like all of our group chats and email threads, were titled Who's Who. And I'm like, oh, I hate those two words together. Stop that.
But I mean, the core title is Harry Potter Character Compendium. And I mm-hmm. love that. It's got some alliteration in there. It's kind of whimsical. Good stuff. Yeah. So let's turn our discussion to the fandom now. What were some of your favorite moments in fandom? Because I take it you've been involved in the Harry Potter fandom for a really long time.
Yeah, it doesn't feel as long. I always get sort of jealous or maybe secondhand envy from knowing that I didn't grow up in the fandom because I was born in 95. So I was I was born a few years late to kind of grow up with the series. So I was like a casual fan in high school. Like I liked Harry Potter, but it wasn't my whole personality. And then in college, I drove 2 hours each way to university, several days a week. So I listened to the audiobooks on repeat. I listened to MuggleCast and a bunch of, MuggleNet's podcasts like Alohomora. Mm. And then when Fantastic Beasts came out, I listened to Speak Beastie and those things. So I was listening to the podcast. I was reading the books, but I was still sort of casual. When Cursed Child came out, I was like, this is my chance. So I dived deep in to the Harry Potter fandom and I flew to London my junior year of university. I saw it, did all the other Potter stuff, fell in love with London. And so when I came back home, I told my advisor, I'm going to do a study abroad. And I'm pretty sure he had a heart attack because at that point I was a senior in college doing a dual degree.
Wow.
And he's like, you're going to go do what now?
You saw Cursed Child and suddenly you're in love with London?
it was fast, let me tell you. But
wow,
I through Cursed Child, I discovered this whole part of the fandom that is almost sort of separate to the main Harry Potter fandom. And I don't necessarily like it better than the main fandom. There is a lot of exclusivity that comes with the Cursed Child fandom. Because, you know, you can only really be a part of it if you've seen the play or I guess read the script. But that's where I really got into the fandom.
Wow. And so it sounds like you got into the books post Deathly Hallows release.
Oh yes.
Right. Mm-hmm. So Cursed Child was kind of that midnight release for you. It was the eighth story. It was something new. Was. Yeah. Interesting. Wow. And look at this. You've already published a book and you were born in 95. My brother's a year older than you and he's not published a book. He just plays Animal Crossing all day.
Oh, I do that too. I've got like 400.
One day, Ryan will publish the Animal Crossing Character Compendium.
I would buy it.
I think Marissa would help him write it. It sounds like.
Yeah. Get it together.
He can have a whole section about the corruption of the Nook family.
Oh my God.
Oh man.
I need to start playing Laura. Animal Crossing.
So Marissa, what's the role of a fan site like MuggleNet in 2020? Because MuggleNet has been around for so long. It's been 20 years now, which is just crazy. 21 years because Emerson launched the site in 1999.
Well, I have a lot of strong feelings on this because that's, My career is in academia and research, and my specialty is in the links between pop culture and literature. And so I've spent a lot of time in fandom and studying fandom. And I think that it's really underrated because it's mostly seen as a space by and for young people and young women specifically, even though we know that's not true. But that's how it's perceived, and therefore it's not taken as seriously in spaces in academia. So I think the role of MuggleNet has always been providing a place for people in the fandom to gather and express themselves. And I think it's still that and has been for 21 years. So I don't see that wavering going forward, because for decades now, two decades, fans have been publishing art and writing and just expressing themselves at really technical and nuanced levels. And all of this is about a quote unquote kids book. So right. If this is a platform where people can continue to make that content, I think that MuggleNet is going to continue, and all the other fan sites as well, they're going to continue to facilitate some amazing evolved cultural waves.
It's interesting because when fan sites launched in 99 in the early 2000s, there was no social media. So you had to really go to the website to check in on what was going on. You couldn't refresh Twitter or Facebook. You had to hop around to different websites. And now the entry point to the websites, to fan sites and all websites, is usually social media first, or getting a text from a friend sharing a link. It's really interesting how that's evolved to me.
I'm just relieved more people still are finding the caption contest, which is the segment I'm still running on MuggleNet.
Because honestly,
it still lives on MuggleNet's website, and some people are still entering. So thank you, everybody. It's still running, you guys. It's biweekly. Go check it out. Go to the website.
I'm going to go on now and suggest a caption. But
thank you.
No problem.
I know people. I've had the privilege of talking to fans, and I know people who still check, like, refresh MuggleNet. Like, MuggleNet is still their like home page. And that's they check instead of like Google or Yahoo News or whatever in the morning. And I'm like, wow, that is very 1999.
Well, it's a good idea these days, because reading MuggleNet is way more pleasant than reading Google News on any given morning. It's
very true.
Well, most of the time anyway.
Man, I'm just having like flashbacks now to before I worked on MuggleNet. It was also my homepage, and I have particular memories of the build up to the release of Order of the Phoenix, and MuggleNet had like a countdown.
Oh yeah, yes. I remember those. What was your theme, Laura? Which theme did you choose the most?
I switched them all the time.
Yeah.
On Tuesdays, she switched to the Ron theme. On Wednesday, it was back to the Ron default theme. Harry.
Thursday, the Ron theme. Friday,
Always the Ron theme.
I'm trying to remember. I think I really liked the Half-Blood Prince one with... What was his name? Eric, you always remember his name. Walking up to the Gaunt House. Bob Ogden. I think there was one of that.
Yeah.
I was just going to say about MuggleNet, I got a chance. Was it last year, Eric, when you all were at Comic-Con here in New York? It seems like five years ago at this point, but.
No, it really does. But no, it was last October. October. Week before. Yeah.
I was just really blown away and impressed just by the staff, like just the number of staff. You know, just to think that are still working there. I know you have some absurd number of people now that are working for MuggleNet, but just that, and then everything that you all did at Comic-Con was just really, and then at the Hard Rock Cafe afterwards, it was just very, very impressive. So for folks who think that, you know, the fandom is dwindling, it certainly isn't. And I know Kat has done a really great job over there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Into the Pensieve was a great, great evening. Great event.
I saw firsthand all the work that went into that. And I can't say enough good things about my colleagues. I mean, they put in hours that you wouldn't believe into things like that. And they just care so much. And it's really impressive to see it pay off.
I just found the Half-Blood Prince theme on MuggleNet in the Wayback Machine. And it's got the countdown to the book too. I used to think those countdowns were revolutionary. I was just fascinated by going to MuggleNet, and right at the top, you could see exactly how many days, hours, minutes, and seconds until the book was released. And do you guys remember, you could add the countdown to your Windows desktop computer.
That's right.
Yep.
I did that.
Those were the days.
Those were the days.
Oh, you know, you're making me countdowns. Remember too, I love the fact that you could get the Halloween theme too at any time during the year. now this is getting very nostalgic.
Yeah. You know, credit to, I think that was Emerson's brother, Dylan, who did all these designs. Mm-hmm. I mean, they really were, they were iconic, frankly. I mean, these website designs were just phenomenal. So Marissa, thank you so much for sharing all that about the book. Where can people buy the book?
Yeah, so you can buy the book anywhere books are sold, but there's a Barnes & Noble exclusive edition, and I really, really recommend that. So, I mean, if you have the money to buy two, you know, support your local indie and also get the Barnes & Noble exclusive edition. There's all kinds of fun content in there.
Yeah, there really is. And like we've been saying, it's just a really wonderful resource. I'm going to be keeping this on my desk because I feel like we're going to need to reference this a lot. Well, I mean, I could have used this like 15 years ago.
For chapter by chapter, it would have been fantastic.
Right. But, and the other thing is, I really don't think there's another book like this out there. And that's what I think is so awesome about it. So congratulations on publishing this book. And I can't wait to see what else MuggleNet comes up with, because these are really helpful.
Yeah. I think we're set for Quizzage for the next couple years. We just use this book.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, Micah, you're stealing my thunder.
Are you
going to be publishing any books that help Eric with the crazy caption contest?
You know, I don't know, but I wouldn't say it's not a possibility.
Okay.
Oh my God. Can you imagine an illustrated book of all the winning captions throughout the years? All 428 weeks. All right. The gears are turning.
I'm not saying the email cat, but I'm not saying don't do that either.
I know. I already have a text message half composed. It's cool.
I'm going to publish a book. Maybe I can work with MuggleNet on this about why Scorbus is real in The Cursed Child. You're a big Cursed Child fan.
I will co-author that with you. Yeah, okay, I've seen fantastic. It over 24 times. So I will write
Jeez.
Where? Primarily New York?
Primarily London. I lived there while I did my master's.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think I mentioned that before, but I know that I maybe put it in the dock or something. But I lived there, and when you live in London and close to central London, you can go to the ticket office and you can get the best seats for like the lowest price.
Yeah.
You just have to be able to go.
You should tell
like
Eric about that because Eric had a little bit of an issue with our tickets the first time.
Oh, I paid Eric
standard fare $428.50 for two tickets.
Yeah. Oh my God.
That was what they cost when they pre-ordered. Why are you shocked? That's totally what everybody else paid.
And we went opening night, so it's fair.
We did go open, but that was totally the pre-order fare on the website where you'd wait for 10 hours for a number to get in line, to then show up at the right time, to then get in queue, to then get the opportunity to pay the tickets. That was what it costs.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I have a photo of my ticket, I think, on my Instagram from the very first preview in London. And people were like, you paid that much in the comments?
Like, that's what they cost.
Yeah, I mean, for real. And obviously, I wanted to get good seats. And Hypeable or MuggleCast was probably paying for it. So what do I care?
Yeah, Here we go. That's my hot tip for anybody who lives in London. I'm sure it works the same in New York or wherever. When theaters open back up, go to the box office, be prepared to go some night that week. You're going to get the best seats for the lowest price.
I paid £450. I hope that's for both parts, not just one part. Oh, man. All right. Okay, so now we're going to play one of our newer segments. We introduced this a couple weeks ago. We called it Guess That Book. But since we were talking about a character compendium today, we're going to do Guess That Character. All right, Marissa, welcome to Guess That Character, the hot new MuggleCast segment. You're a listener, so you probably heard Guess That Book a few weeks ago, right?
Yes.
Okay, fantastic. So for anybody who doesn't know, I'm going to be playing a selection of clips from the UK audiobooks narrated by Stephen Fry, and everybody else has to guess which character is saying these lines. Now, this was difficult to prepare because Stephen Fry and Jim Dale both do impersonations. I was trying to find clips that wouldn't give away who was saying them. So we'll see how this goes. I'm going to play a clip and then everybody has 10 seconds to guess who said it. Is everybody ready?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. Some of these are really short because otherwise they give too much away.
All right.
We'll start with a short one.
Show yourself, said.
Did he curse? What happened? I heard a bleep.
Yeah, I bleeped out the character name. Okay, Laura, guess.
Is it Filch?
Filch.
Dumbledore.
Mad-Eye.
Mad-Eye.
Dobby.
Wow, actually, you all are wrong. that was Snape speaking to the Marauder's map in Prisoner of Azkaban. Ooh. Show yourself. Okay, here's a longer one. Let's see if you can guess this.
What you've got to realize, Harry, is that the Death Eaters have got the full might of the Ministry on their side now, said They've got the power to perform brutal spells without fear of identification or arrest.
Guess that character.
Lupin?
Arthur.
Arthur. Yeah.
Eric was right.
Hey.
It was Lupin in Deathly Hallows in the chapter The Bribe.
10 points.
All right. I'm tripping you guys up this week. I love it. Okay, here's the next one.
Keep your voice down, Neville. The password's pig snout, but it won't help you now. The fat lady's gone off somewhere. How's your arm?
Hermione?
Yeah, Hermione.
Yeah, I'll go with that.
I'll go with Harry, just to mix it up.
Okay, most got it right. It was Hermione.
That's his Hermione voice? Stone.
Oh, actually, wait, no, wait. I screwed it up. It is Harry. Oh.
What? Andrew.
Sorry.
Unacceptable. So,
guess sorry. We know who's next. Guess we know who the next one's going to be.
No. All right. Here's the next one. An ultra short one.
Me, he said.
What? How are we supposed to?
Dudley Dursley.
Who would say me?
Dudley Dursley.
He said.
Tom Riddle.
Draco.
You're
going to
be mad at yourself. Gilderoy Lockhart.
Oh, that was a clever pull.
Nice yes. One.
That was a really well clever pull.
I thought there was a bit of a Lockhart tone in there, right?
Me. He said.
Lockhart.
Let me introduce your new Defense Against the Dark Arts teacher, me. Yeah, I like it.
All right, and the final one.
Oh, all right then. Snapped. But I hate talking to you in that cloak. I never know if I'm looking at you or not.
Hermione.
McGonagall.
Yeah, I'm going to say Hermione.
Okay, yep, it was Hermione. That was going to be the next one I played after the accidental Hermione answer. And I was like, no, of course not. All right. Well, we had some mixed results there. So good job, everybody, for playing Guess That Character. I won't bore you with the song again.
Oh, no more Mega Man
music?
Oh, I
like the song. I like the music.
All right. Thanks for playing Guess That Character. So looking ahead, next week, we will put a cap on chapter by chapter by discussing our favorite chapters in the Harry Potter series. And what this discussion will yield are the best chapters across the whole series. So we're really looking forward to looking at all of the books and our favorite chapters in them. We want to hear what your favorite chapter was as well. So send it in, mugglecast@gmail.com, or use the contact form on mugglecast.com, or call it in, 19203-MUGGLE. That's 19203-684453, or record a voice memo on your smartphone and send it to mugglecast@gmail.com. We would love to hear what your favorite chapter across the whole Harry Potter series is. If you do call in your favorite chapter, please do try to keep your message about a minute long and record in a quietish place. We do have a chicken soup today, but before that, it's time for Quizzitch.
Last week's question, what do Jamie Parker, Jim Dale, and Ivana Lynch all have in common?
Micah said he had a hunch last week. Micah, do you want to guess?
I would say it has something to do with birthdays. I think I only know because Ivana's is close to mine that's why that popped up in my head.
That is exactly correct. They all have birthdays this. Thank you, Andrew. They all have birthdays this weekend, in fact.
Oh, this weekend. Wow. So
the weekend that they're recording. Yep. So we're recording this on Saturday, the 15th. The 14th was Jamie Parker, who played Harry on In Cursed Child, as Marissa knows, having seen it. Jim Dales is today that we're recording, the 15th. And Ivana Lynch is tomorrow, August 16th.
Oh.
And on Monday, somebody that is very near and dear to the show, Helen McRory.
Wow.
Oh, I share a birthday with Narcissa. Wow.
Yeah. So Micah also is born on Monday. So Micah, it was a valid comment when you said I should be on this list too, because you absolutely should be. Happy early birthday.
Thank
buddy,
you.
By the way. Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. Happy birthday, Micah. That's very exciting. What are you doing during a pandemic?
Well, I'm definitely turning off my work phone. That's step number one.
Okay.
Getting down to the beach, maybe in the morning before it gets crowded, and just hanging out. Yeah. There's not much to do in a pandemic.
You heard about this new beach read, the unofficial Harry Potter character compendium?
Oh, yeah. Well, maybe I'll have to take an Instagram and,
okay.
Is that what the kids call it? An Instagram or like IG story or like a reel? Like what the hell are reels now? I don't even know.
Well,
it's their version of TikTok.
Our age, Micah.
Yeah, yeah. Micah is revealing just how old he is turning on Monday. I see. Yeah.
Well, correct answers for Quizzitch were submitted to us over on Twitter by Megan, Radio Free Ryan, Sup Sarah, Sarah aka Weensy, The Queer Cousin, Sarah McConnell, Sarah Paulette Davis, Emily, and Bort Voldemort.
Bort.
Sorry, what was the last one?
Bort Voldemort.
Okay.
Oh, actually, we did get a few joke answers, though. Emily actually guessed if they were all vegan. I don't actually know that for sure. And Sarah Davis said all three are in this week's Quizzitch question.
Well, that's right, actually.
Smart. She was not wrong.
Yeah. I said besides Harry Potter. So, yeah, correct. Thank you, everyone, for playing. That was a jokey one. Next week's question comes directly from our source material of this week's discussion. What is Daisy Pennyfold known for?
Being in that Quizzitch question. Sorry. Bad joke.
Okay.
Bad
from joke. Now on, going forward, besides the fact that they're the subject of the question, that is no longer an answer. Sarah Davis, you were the only person who could win for that.
Okay. To wrap up today's episode, we have a chicken soup from Grant. Hi, Mugglecasters. I was just listening to episode 476 and really enjoyed the trip down memory lane. I'm a casual listener of the show now, but in high school, I never missed an episode. I wanted to reach out to sincerely thank you all so much for the work you have put and continue to put into the show. I was definitely an outcast in high school. The highlight of the show for me was episode 117 after J.K. Rowling announced that Dumbledore was gay. I am from rural Western Maryland and had never heard anyone talk about homosexuality in a way that was even remotely positive. As a very closeted 15-year-old who couldn't even accept himself for who he was, hearing people I respected so much talk about my favorite Harry Potter character being gay in a positive, accepting way had such a profound impact on my self-esteem. I credit this episode completely for being able to accept myself for who I am. I distinctly remember crying and listening to your comments and saying to myself, you are gay and it's okay. Everyone is not going to hate you. It also gave me the courage to come out to my mom shortly later. Today, I have a wonderful supporting family, have been happily married to my husband for 5 years, and am much more comfortable in my own skin. Listening to this anniversary episode brought back many great memories from the show, and in particular, this one. I felt the need all these years later to reach out and tell you about what an impact you had on my life. Your show is not only entertaining, but you have also made real impacts on people's lives. I know it did for me. Thank you, Grant. Grant, that is amazing.
Wow.
Thank you so much for sharing this.
Yeah, I was a little weepy when I was reading this. Thank you for your vulnerability.
Yeah, and this line, I credit this episode completely for being able to accept myself for who I am. Wow, like, that just means the world to us. Coming out for me was difficult as well. And MuggleCast and MuggleNet played a huge part in my coming out process as well. So I hear where you're coming from, Grant. And I'm really glad to hear that you're doing so well these days. I still remember like the day after J.K. Rowling made that announcement, we were in New York City for the announcement. And according to Jamie, I stood up and applauded, which I don't remember
you
that
did.
Part. But going home from the event, or it was the day after, I remember being in a New York taxi and hearing on the radio, in other news, J.K. Rowling has announced that Dumbledore is gay. I'm like, wow, this is a really big deal if they're announcing this on New York radio stations.
And I found out the same day I was across the world. I was in Australia at the time. Mm-hmm. It was between Melbourne and Sydney, and it was on the radio the same day. Worldwide news, just absolute huge news. Probably the similar radio report. J.K. Rowling says that J.K., you know, right? Whatever. Just in a different accent.
It was like a real person was coming out. It was stunning.
Yeah.
It was such big news. So
yeah, huge celebrity, that Dumbledore.
Yeah, yeah. Harry Potter has helped us in a lot of ways, and we will always be grateful. And Marissa, thank you so much for coming on the show today. It was awesome having you on, and thank you for telling us about the Harry Potter character compendium from MuggleNet.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. I had a really good time.
We would love if you, the listener, could take a moment to review us on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to podcasts. We'd love to get a bunch of fresh reviews in the directories because it helps new listeners discover us. So thank you in advance for that. Also, follow us on social media. We are MuggleCast on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. You will get Throwback Thursday clips, new episode previews, the latest news, our favorite Harry Potter memes from around the internet, behind-the-scenes looks at the show, and a whole lot more. And finally, we would also love your support on Patreon, patreon.com/MuggleCast. Our Patreon is the reason that we are a weekly podcast. And to thank you for supporting us, you get benefits like a new physical gift every year. Next year, look forward to the Umbridge pillow that you can punch. The Umbridge punchable pillow has a nice ring to it, too.
Like it.
You can listen in as we record each episode on Saturday mornings. You will also get to see our planning docs so you can see what's coming up. You get these cool behind-the-scenes looks at the show. And we also do other benefits like Slug Club Hangouts. We hosted a hangout with our Slug Club patrons earlier this week. We were talking books the whole time.
Yeah.
Micah, you got a ton of recommendations, and you bought a few of those books.
I did. I bought three of them, actually. Just two of them are the first book in a series, so I figured instead of going all in without, you know, reading a book first, I'm going to read the first book, and then if I like, I'll continue. But yeah, just some really great recommendations across the board. I mean, I was impressed. Like, that chat that we had in the Zoom meeting, like, kept filling up with more and more book recommendations. So maybe I'll have to mention a few on the on an upcoming episode.
And on our Patreon, you also get access to ad-free editions of MuggleCast and bonus MuggleCast installments and more, if you can believe it. We're doing a lot over there. Patreon.com/MuggleCast. Thank you for your support.
Do we have a TikTok yet? Is that happening?
No. No TikTok for us.
We should make one.
Why? Okay, Laura, you can head up our TikTok.
While we still can.
Yeah, that's kind of why I want to do it, because if it ends up getting banned, just to say we had one. But
okay, Micah and Laura are in charge of the TikTok. Good luck with that. Yeah. I'm not touching that with a 10-foot pole.
I don't even have one, so I don't even know what it is.
All right, thank you everybody for listening. I'm Andrew.
I'm Eric.
I'm Micah.
I'm Laura.
And I'm Marissa.
Bye, everybody.
Bye, y'all.
Bye.
Bye.